that wasn't a reference to you actually putting the leadership into action.
No.
And putting this whole thing to bed.
No, of course not. It doesn't need to be put to bed because it doesn't exist. And you know that. You've talked to many of my colleagues, if not all of them.
What do you think about the comments that Judith Tizard made in terms of the party bullying her in some way, trying to manipulate the list? She seems to think that it damages the integrity of the list process.
Well, it doesn't, because I made it clear as leader of the Labour Party to Judith that if she wished to take up that position, that was entirely her right to do so, and she'd be welcomed back into caucus. And I said that to four other colleagues, and all of them were appreciative of it.
She said that it sounded like you were chewing a dead rat at the time.
I don't know about that. I've been sparring with Judith for 35 years. I guess it's not going to finish yet.
Are you heartened by the Greens coming out saying that it's extremely unlikely they'd go with National?
Well, I think it is extremely unlikely that they'd go with National. The Greens and National don't have much in common. How could the Greens support a party that was going to mine our national parks? I think it stands to reason that the Greens would support a Labour-led government, and I welcome that.
You might have said that, though, before the last election when the Māori Party went into an arrangement with National as well. I mean, there could be common ground there that... I mean, today's statement opens the possibility of a confidence and supply agreement with National.
No, I think what the Māori Party example shows is that if you enter into an expedient arrangement, it's likely to split your party and it's likely to lose your support. And the Māori Party is suffering just because of that arrangement that they made with National. The Greens have looked at that and I think learned from it.
What's the update with the Labour list? Who is going to be New Zealand's next MP?
Well, there is a process that the Electoral Commission follows, and they will go through each person from the top down on the list until somebody agrees that they will take up that position. From conversations that I've had, those that were long-serving Labour MPs that lost their seats at the last election have moved on in their lives. They're not looking at coming back. My anticipation is that it will probably be Lewisa Wall, who's a young, dynamic candidate for the Labour Party. She is going to be in Parliament at the end of this year, and it makes sense for her to take up that position, and she's expressed the desire to do so if that offer is made to her.
It does make sense, but what doesn't make sense is the Labour list. What's the point of having it if you're going to ignore five people who are on it?
Well, we're not ignoring five people. Five people, 2.5 years out from the last election, have re-established their lives. They have not intended to come back into Parliament. They have not re-nominated for Parliament. And I think everybody here would agree that it's common sense that they not accept that offer from their own perspective, and that's what I'm anticipating will happen.
Yeah, it is common sense, but the list doesn't make much sense, does it? Why not have a method where you can just choose who you want and save all of this charade?
Well, you could do that, but that's not the way the law is at the moment. It's not a charade. People will be offered that position in good faith. They will make a decision about whether or not they accept it. If they don't, it's offered to the next person. The end result, I'm anticipating, will be that the person that will accept the position is the person that is a candidate for the election this year, that has a bright parliamentary future ahead of her. And I think others who have moved on in their lives are not likely to accept the offer made to them.
Do you think that the law should be changed so that we don't have to go through these sort of shenanigans again?
Well, I don't think it is a shenanigan, and I don't think it's a charade. I think it's a perfectly appropriate way of offering the position to the next person on the list. 6 months out from an election, most of them have decided that there's not much point in coming back for a very short space of time, and I think you'll understand the reason for that.
Do you expect the Darren Hughes affair in any form to be on the caucus agenda tomorrow, or is this
It will undoubtedly be discussed, because this is the first opportunity the caucus will have to discuss it. But I think we'll discuss it relatively quickly, and we'll move on. Labour MPs, as I do, want to focus on the issues that will worry New Zealanders on an ongoing basis. Whether it's Pansy Wong or Darren Hughes or somebody accepting a position on the list, this is something that's momentary in the life of most electors. Higher prices, the threat of unemployment, the sale of assets, they're things that are ongoing.
Have you put it on the agenda? You presume.
I will raise it in my report. That's the normal way in which these things are done.
Would you expect to elect a new senior whip, and when are we going to see a reallocation of the portfolios?
Well, there's a vacancy for the position of senior whip, and there's a vacancy for the position of spokesperson on education. I choose the spokespeople. That's within my remit, and I'll announce that after I've announced it to caucus. The position of senior whip is one that is elected by the caucus, and caucus will make that decision tomorrow.
So we'd expect both of those announced tomorrow?
Both of those will be announced after caucus tomorrow.
Mr Gough, can we just ask you about this education bullying, the government's position on that? They're sending out letters to the schools. Some are saying that the letter itself amounts to bullying. What's Labor's position?
Oh, look, I didn't think the letter added much, but I'd be reluctant to describe it as bullying.
Do they need more support rather than directives?
I think that government needs to work with the schools, with the parents, to stop some of what I have to regard as fairly hideous incidents of bullying that we've seen. I don't think it's that bullying is new. I think it's now that you've got the ability to video record that on cell phones that we're seeing the dramatic impact of bullying. That has a horrendous effect on the lives of those who are the victims, and I would want to see the government working with the schools and the parents to do everything possible to bring that to an end.
The SIS legislation is up before the committee this week, still going to be heard in private. Does Labor have any concerns about that? Has Labor pushed for those to be open?
I moved in the committee that the hearing should be held and open, as is the normal situation with hearing submissions on legislation before a select committee. That was defeated by the National Party, the Māori Party and the ACT Party.
Do you think that's good enough?
No, I don't think it's good enough. I think that the changes being recommended may well be sensible changes, but if you hear these things in secrecy, then you raise questions about what the motivation of the government is and what the nature of the legislation is. Wherever possible, things should be held in the open, and that's why I moved the resolution that I did.
Just looking at the response to the Christchurch earthquake, some pretty grim figures, of course, about the people on the rescue package that's about to run out in a few weeks' time. Should that be extended? Would Labor extend it?
Well, I think the really important thing is, with an estimated 9,000 people being made redundant, is that we should have already had skill training programs up and running. The Institute of Technology in Christchurch is ready and able to do that, but 7 months after the first earthquake, nothing has happened, and that really isn't good enough.
It's a pretty long time for a croupier on the casino to retrain his ability, aren't
they? Oh, look, there's a whole range of different trades that would come out of the need to rebuild Christchurch, and people have different desires and different skills. But what we know is that we'll have a huge shortage of people in the building and related trades. We should be preparing people to take up those skills. We should be preparing people in the industry to advance the skills that they already have.
Do you support Gerard Brown's suggestion of relaxing regulations around placement of a casino to keep the casino open?
Well, I think if the casino can be safely opened, it ought to be to preserve the jobs. But somebody has to make a decision that is knowledgeable in that area as to when and if the casino will be safe to open.
But he's talking about a different place.
Well, if it can be relocated and it meets the general requirements of running a casino, then that would be desirable. There are security issues around casinos, but I'm sure that they could be catered for in a different venue.
Just with the rescue package, I mean, just unclear there, what would Labor do? Would you look to extend that beyond its...
Well, I think that the critical thing is to make sure that people in Christchurch who have lost their jobs through no fault of their own do have options. Options for support, options for retraining, options to get back in the workforce. And the idea that you might get people coming from around the world to rebuild Christchurch, well, Christchurch has a 7% unemployment rate, simply isn't good enough. First preference needs to be given to people in Christchurch to upgrade their skills to take advantage of the new work opportunities.
What about people who work for foreign-owned companies like the casino? Should they be eligible for government assistance?
Well, I think you've got to look really at the individual. And if the individual is disadvantaged because he or she has lost his or her job through no fault of their own, then the focus should be on the individual rather than on the employer. If the employer can make the payment, we'd expect them to do that. If they can't, we'd expect support from the government to assist that person out of the difficult situation they're in. They may have lost their home, lost their job, you know, New Zealand owes those people a decent start back in life, and that's what Labor would be wanting to give to them.
What about paying for the rebuild? The Greens polled the public recently and found some quite strong support for their quake levy idea. What's Labor's thinking on how we should pay for it?
Well, I don't want to see any other levy placed on lower and middle income people. They're already being squeezed. They're already finding it very hard to make ends meet. If anybody needed to make a contribution, then perhaps those that got the huge tax cuts at the top should be expected to give some of that back to help meet the cost of the quake. I haven't seen that proposal yet from the government.
A levy over $70,000 for those in the
I'm not into the details of that. I'm simply saying that there's plenty of room at the top from people that got hundreds of dollars and sometimes thousands of dollars back each week in tax cuts to pay a little more to help people in Christchurch.
Sorry to bang on about this, but you don't actually know who is going to replace Darren Hughes on the list.
I have a strong belief that it's likely to be Louisa Wall, but I can't make that statement until the position has been offered to each of the people ahead of her on the list, and they have in turn declined to take up that position. That is a process that's set out under law. We'll follow that process, and the decision will become clear at that point.
And you've got no problem with the way this law is set up? It couldn't be changed just to be a little bit more flexible?
Well, in terms of looking at the changes that might be made to make MMP work better, that's one of the areas that could come under review, but I don't regard that as pressing, and I think under the current law, common sense will prevail in this case.
What about making it a party rule that in the event that a place becomes vacant,
Well, you can't really cut across the law. If the law says a particular process has to be followed, and you're cutting across that process by denying people their rights under law, that would be wrong.
You'd be disappointed if someone before Louisa Wall on the list takes up?
Well, no, I've said to all of them that if they choose to take up that is their right, and I'd welcome them back into caucus.
I'm just going back to Judith Tizard. She said under your leadership there was a bit of a return of the factions within the party. Do you have a response to that?
That's simply not correct. I did like what she said about me being able and intelligent, so we have some areas of agreement.
She also said you had to ask yourself if you could actually win this election, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can.
There's no factions in the Labor Party.
No, and there hasn't been for a very, very long time. You've got groupings around personalities from time to time, but there aren't factions in the sense of left and right. That's something that you see in the Australian Labor Party. You don't see it formalised or even in an informal manner. In a Labor caucus. Okay, thank you very much.